the Matt Bubala Show, Radio 720, WGN. Going into my Wayback Machine, it was about 24 years ago when I was a tour guide at the Museum of Science and Industry, and I might find myself in the U-505 submarine or once in a while in the coal mine with a girl named Susie Flores, who was just the nicest little thing back in the day. And now she's Dr. Susana Flores, published author. Yes. Welcome to the show. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for
in the middle of the
here.
Night.
Right. 2:30. Yes, I thought you were kidding. First, you know, I was like, he's joking. And then I was like, he's really not joking.
No, he's really not joking.
a lot of coffee. You're like,
well, it's not like I can look like I just got up, right? I'm like, no, we're going to take a photo. And so now you're dressed like you guys are going out to, you know.
Well, I was thinking pajamas or something, you know, like some whatever hair.
No, we can't do that anymore. You're in the showcase studio, for goodness sakes. Look at the thousands of people walking by Michigan Avenue at 2:30
in the morning.
Absolutely. You want to find some clients. You just wait right here at 2:30 in the morning. You'll see some walking by.
I would bet. Very interesting. A lot of stories I'm sure you have.
Absolutely. So you're a psychologist. How long have you been in business?
Over 10 years.
10 years.
Right. So in community counseling centers, a VA hospital, federal prison. I worked there as well.
Wow.
And private practice, and I've seen it all.
So besides the Facebook stuff, you have many more interesting stories, I
would
imagine.
I have many interesting stories. Most psychologists and police officers, and probably you guys do as well.
Is it tough being a psychologist? Is it tough disassociating from the work and going back to normal life? I know a lot of police officers who really had a tough life because of what they saw, and it led to drinking and different just emotional issues. Is it tough for a psychologist because you're trained and prepared to deal with things and to help other people overcome things, but then you have to hear a lot of bad stuff all day long?
Well, we do. I would say earlier in our training, it's very difficult. We always take that stuff home, and then seasoned psychologists just learn that, you know, you're just doing the best that you can, and you have to, you know, just compartmentalize it and not bring it home and, you know, just try to help people as much as you can and realize you can't save everybody.
Yeah.
You know,
but I can't imagine how tough that is. And also, I imagine there's some clients that really become addicted to you as well. And that has to be tough to maintain that balance of where this relationship has to end and you have to be able to have your own life, and they have to be able to still have their own life.
Oh, absolutely. That's going to probably bleed into our topic, right? You know, stalkers and, you know, how I have my own Facebook page. A lot of privacy because clients kept trying to friend me, and I couldn't do it, of course. It's prohibited.
Yeah.
And just even explaining that. So that's the beginning part of an intake. You know, it's like, you can't friend me on Facebook. You can't do this. And yeah, there's boundaries.
And that's got to be tough because they want to view you as a friend because, and you need them in some ways to feel so comfortable with you that they will share all this stuff.
Sure, they're sharing.
But then you're like,
most,
but we can't be friends on Facebook. And that's got to be like, well, wait a minute. I'm telling you everything here.
Right, right. And so they're sharing their deepest, darkest secrets. They're making themselves very vulnerable. And so then they'll try other stuff like, how about LinkedIn? How about this? You know, like, oh, so if we end therapy, then what? And, you know, we're not even, the profession is not even prepared to handle all of these questions, like which one is okay, which one is not, at what point can you, you know, connect with people? These are, it's a new phenomenon, really.
You're married, but psychologists that aren't married, females,
okay,
do they tend to wear wedding rings? Because I would think that you have a male client, and I would imagine it's very easy for clients to become, you know, here's this person who's helping me, and then they become attracted to them, and that's got to be an issue for clients, whether it's a man with a woman or a woman with a man.
When I worked at the federal prison, definitely, and then I discovered soon enough that didn't really matter.
I would imagine that there's,
At that point, it became more of a challenge, actually, and so, yeah, inappropriateness or whatever, it didn't matter. Some psychologists choose to not wear anything, even if they are married, because you don't want your client projecting assumptions about you, and they always try to figure out, you know, some of them, what sign we are or where we live, and they want a little piece of our, you know, personal, but it's not about us, it's about them. I do wear my wedding ring, you know, and so it hasn't been a real major issue.
How much do clients do that? How much do clients ask you questions? And then how much do you allow that in? Because I would imagine if we're going to sit there and talk a lot, then naturally, I imagine two things. One is I want to deflect a little bit. I don't want this to be so much about me because, you know, I don't want it to have to be so much about me. But also, I imagine then you start getting curious about this person who's advising me and I'm putting so much trust in. So you want to start finding out how they think and then questioning that. And, you know,
I think it depends on a person's comfort level. I have found that if you disclose a little bit, you know, if it's appropriate, it can be a very powerful therapeutic session. Like, for example, you have kids, right?
Yes.
Okay. So let's say you're talking about your kids. It's very common for people to say, do you have kids? And, you know, I think it's legitimate for me to say, no, I don't, by choice, right? I said, however, I have treated a lot of children, and I have treated a lot of parents, and I know certain issues. However, if you prefer a psychologist that does have children or that works with children, that's legitimate. So also, just, you know, just sharing some challenges, or even share some other client stories, like the way other people have coped with a similar situation, so people can relate to that. They also want to know that you're human. You know, it's not like, you know, I'm Dr. Frazier and I'm listening, right? Or whatever, right? It's like you are human and that you could relate to certain themes, because life is difficult, and it's difficult for us too. Some people think, you know, psychologists have it all together, and just really, you know, we try just like everyone else, but no, we don't all have it together now.
That's very interesting. But can your clients know that? Do you tell them that, or do they need to think, no, this person, because, you know, if I'm seeing you and I'm going through a problem with my marriage, and then I find out that your marriage is falling apart at the same time, I'd be like, well, you don't know how to do this either. Why are you advising me?
See, and I would say, you're right. Marriage is tough, isn't it? Right? You know, and yet.
How do you feel about that? Do you say that a lot? How do you feel about that?
How do you feel? Exactly. Tell me about your mother.
You know? Is that the fallback right away when they start getting a little too close? How did your mother? Yeah,
exactly,
I think that relates to your mother.
Right, exactly. Did she nurse you, or did she not? You know, did she abandon you? You know,
your mother didn't hug you, did she?
All else fails, if we like lose the conversation a little bit, we trailed off. It's like, let's go to your mother, right? And it's kind of a safeguard. You know, then we have the therapist poker
the
face.
Secret is out.
Yeah, exactly.
The mother doesn't relate to anything in your life, but we like to bring that out because it really confuses you.
Because it makes you angry.
Yes.
Right? And so, like, it'll bring out emotion. It'll make you angry or sad. And so,
terrible. Let's talk about that next time. You always end with that, right? You always leave them wanting more.
Right, yeah.
We'll have to get back to that next time.
Right. Time's up.
Terrible.
You know, hold on to that thought.
Right. 312-981-7200. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about Facebook. We want your calls and texts. Are you addicted to Facebook? Have you reconnected with somebody you shouldn't have over Facebook? Mm-hmm. How much do you seek validation? I think we could talk about this for a long time. 312-981-7200. Dr. Susanna Flores is in studio. Her book is called Face Hooked. It's available now at Amazon.com. It'll be in bookstores hopefully sometime this weekend, right? You're just waiting for the boxes to arrive.
They're printing as we speak.
312-981-7200. Next. Matt Bubala's show, Radio 720, WGN. In studio right now, Dr. Susanna Flores. Her book is called Face Hooked. We're going to get into talking about Facebook and all its inherent joys and problems. Dr. Flores, as a general rule, with Facebook, is it a good thing that it's out there for us, or do you find it in your dealings to be like more detrimental than it does good for people?
You know, I say this in my book, like, I love Facebook. My friends would rat me out in a New York minute if I said otherwise. I love social media. I love the way that we're able to connect with each other in instance, with people across the globe in a matter of seconds, right? The book came about because I just started noticing behavioral patterns and people, changes, you know, aside from, you know, just even my own, you know, changes, like I'm not one to edit myself, and I just notice myself like, okay, I'm typing something and then delete, 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 you know, and I'm just trying to make it more appealable, I guess, if that's a word, to other people. But little by little, I started noticing my clients beginning to mention it almost every day, something like someone blocked me, someone unfriended me, my boyfriend is cheating on me with some, you know, floozy he met on, you know, or his ex or something that he hooked up with again. And then it got more serious. I had to hospitalize a couple of people. I think that it's not so much Facebook. It's just, it's us. You know, like Facebook doesn't make us do anything. You know, like Facebook doesn't change people. People change people. It could be a reflection of everything that is good within your life, or it could be a reflection of everything that is bad. What I've noticed is that it reflects it, or it magnifies it. Right.
Well, in the book, you mentioned some really just terrible stories that relate to Facebook. One is the guy who found out he got dumped because his girlfriend changed her status from engaged to in a relationship, and then the photo that accompanied the in a relationship was her with his best friend.
Absolutely correct. And these are not 20-year-olds. It was, I think they were in their 40s. So and professionals. So we're not talking about teenagers here.
Well, how did they not think I should call? And I mean, that is how that wasn't just, oh, I'm sorry you saw that. You write in the book that was their choice on how they were going to let him know.
Right. They thought it was time to let him know, to let everyone know at the same time. And even though they knew that his parents, her parents, everybody was interconnected, and so his phone was ringing off the hook, of course, she just didn't think of the, you know, she knew it was going to be painful, and I guess she thought that there was safety in numbers. Like, you know, if some people said, oh, that's great or whatever, but she just didn't think it would have led to, you know, such chaos as it did.
And you ended up hospitalizing
yes.
that patient. He
yeah,
was so
I took
distraught.
Him to the emergency room because he said he wanted to die.
Okay, so without Facebook,
right.
How does that turn out? Does she end up doing something? I mean, if she has no way to blanket cover tell everybody at the same time,
mm-hmm.
do you think he doesn't end up in the hospital, that she somehow has to let him know and this is so awful that he still ends up in the hospital? Or do you think because everybody found out at once and he realized not only did my engagement just end and this woman dumped me,
right.
my best friend is part of this,
right.
and now everybody I know knows. Is that what set him over, do you think?
I have never met anyone who was that enthusiastic to go into a psychiatric unit. And, you know, just full disclosure, he gave me permission to share this story. Everyone who's mentioned the book gave me permission to share their stories because they wanted to try to help other people. He's like, take my laptop, take my phone. He wanted to be unwired. For a while. And I don't know, I can't say for certain if he would have ended up in the hospital. I mean, it was traumatic enough, right?
Sure.
For your best friend to be cheating on, you know, with your fiance,
yeah.
and horrible, right? But the trauma was magnified because of the public forum. You know, it's just, you know, there's no escaping it. Everyone got, and imagine, this is multiple messages that he was receiving at the same time. So he didn't even have time to process this, right?
Yeah.
So he called her, of course, tried to block everybody else off. What is going on? And so she said, yeah, it was just time to let you know. And at the same time, his mom's calling, his dad's calling, his brother's calling, his sister's calling, everyone's calling. And, you know, just, you know, horrified.
I mean, this is like in the town square bringing everybody together for a public flogging. It's
amazing
to think that she and the guy that was the best friend thought this is the way to go.
Right.
I mean, what is wrong with them?
Right. I don't know. You know, and again, they just end, you know, fast forward. I guess it didn't work out. So then she tried to change the relationship status back to engaged, right? And there, exactly.
How
a
long
lot of
later was that she went back to engaged?
It was about 2 months. And I mean, come on, you know, like that wasn't too much of a shocker, right? Like, you know, would something like this possibly last or something? And he did get to the point of laughing kind of like you did, you know, like, right.
And he didn't end up back with her?
Absolutely not. No.
Because I would think as a psychologist, the way mm-hmm. the untrained like myself would handle this is I would say, aren't you lucky?
Yes.
That she just did that to you.
Absolutely.
That you
and that's
know
what we did, right?
How awful this person is, and
absolutely.
You're not married to her, and you're
right.
not, you,
and
you don't
have
three
kids. Right.
You just got a clean break.
Absolutely. So this was a blessing in disguise, actually. Sometimes, you know, something traumatic, you know, and he's like, well, at least I learned what I don't want.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Both in
Let's
friendship
see.
And relationship.
Next time, don't get the girl that's going to cheat with the best friend. Oh, and in the best friend category, don't get the...
Yeah, and the friend tried to friend him again on Facebook, and it really didn't work out well for them, for the original couple, because everyone unfriended them, and it was just, you
oh.
know... But it was major drama. Everybody... and see, that's just the thing about Facebook. If you're airing your dirty laundry, you're putting stuff out there, people will comment, right? You're inviting it.
Yeah.
And then they get upset because people comment, right? But it's like, it's public. Right. So you can't really get upset if people are sharing their views. And some people are really nasty. I'm sure you've seen that, you know, and, you know, it's like you could have a positive quote and someone will get offended in some way, you know.
It is. Well, you know, I try to avoid politics or things that are going to rile up people. But do you think that just innocuous comments tend to bring something out of people
Absolutely.
Where they'll say stuff? And why
Absolutely.
Is that? Because you're friends with these people. I mean, you've chosen to be in some sort of relationship with them, whether you see. I mean, it's funny. You and I are friends on Facebook. Hadn't seen each other in 20 some years.
Right. Right.
And I have a lot of friends like that on Facebook. The mm-hmm. people we used to work with at the museum or people I went to high school or college with. There's lots of people that it's these very odd relationships. We would never, you know, 75 to 80% of my friends on Facebook I haven't seen physically in 20 years.
That's
or more.
That's about accurate, right? To average, right?
So why are we, you know, if there wasn't this opportunity, I would never connect with these people. And it's nice and all that we're connected, but there's sure. no real connection there. So why do we do it?
It's connection without connection. It's illusionary connection, right? So we're functioning out of these avatars that we're creating and editing and enhancing. You've seen the photographs or, you know, everything, right? So again, it's an illusionary. So if I know you in real life and then I, let's say I have a conversation with you and then you post something and I happen to think that that has something to do with the conversation that actually happened to me, I posted a quote of Abraham Lincoln, right? At one point I'm like, okay, quotes are safe, right? Mm-hmm. They're positive, they're motivational, whatever. A friend called me, she's like, was that about me? You know, and I was just like, no.
Well, it
was
but that's a, easy you know? To see that, you know, you talk to somebody and they were, you know, depressed or they were negative about something. So I'm going to post this positive thing. And then, so well, I just talked, well, she's, that's about me.
That's
why would she
me.
Do that?
Right. That's
why
a would you jab do that at me. Right. You know, and so people are beginning to put more importance or more weight on what people are posting on Facebook. I called a friend the other day to wish her a happy birthday, and she's like, but why didn't you put it on my wall? You know, it's like she wants the numbers on the wall, but I'm like, I'm calling
why
you.
Why would you call me? I have a Facebook page.
Oh, no, it's even more annoying because of technology, right? We don't even like voice messages anymore. They're annoying, right? So it's like, it's all about texting. It's all about brevity. Right. And instant access and conversations are, you know, or even dinner parties or whatever, like, you know, they are slowly dwindling. People are seeing each other less and less.
Let's talk about the birthdays for a minute, because this is okay. An interesting thing to me on Facebook.
Happy birthday. Click, click, click.
How much pressure do you feel when you see Facebook? I don't always do it. And when I do, because I feel terrible, I really do wishing somebody a happy birthday on Facebook when the only damn reason I'm doing it is because Facebook told me. So I don't comment on their wall. I'll send them a personal message if I really care to do this. And I'll say, sure. Facebook told me it's your birthday today. I hope you have a happy birthday. Because I want to be genuine in that, like, there's no way in the world I'd know or tell you otherwise. But
right.
Here you go.
Right. You know, but that removes the obligation before we actually sent birthday cards. Remember birthday cards?
Well, but most of these people, I mean, mm-hmm. Don't you still get your mom a birthday card?
Of course.
If you're seeing your relatives or your sister or your brother, you're at a party, you still get them a birthday card.
Absolutely.
Have you really replaced any birthday cards with Facebook birthdays, or is
that's
it just
a good question.
All these people who I never in a million years would have been wishing a happy birthday to, you know, because I haven't seen Mark Pfister from St. Thomas More in 30 years.
Right.
I would never wish him a happy birthday, but Facebook told me it's his birthday, and now 80 people wish him a happy birthday.
And so now you
don't
feel
I look like a jerk not wishing him a happy birthday?
And that's the obligation part of it. It's like, you know, not only do you have to post perhaps happy birthday, but then, you know, someone sends you a friend request. It's awkward, right? If you don't necessarily want them as a friend, but that you have too many mutual friends, right? And so you're just like, oh, okay.
Yeah, you kind of have to accept
right.
that, don't
and
you?
So, right, you kind of, well, many people feel like they do.
Well, how would you advise them? Because, you know, it's weird for me because I have friends who I know on Facebook, and then people who just hear the show, mm-hmm. and so they friend you. Mm-hmm. And so I'll see that and I'll say, okay, I don't know who this person is, and then I'll check their the mutual friends. And it's like the newsman here and the other show host here, and I'll say, okay, well, it's somebody that's just a fan of the radio station. And then I just automatically, I mean, I'll look like a real jerk saying no, right? So of course I say yes, even mm-hmm. though I have no idea who they are.
Right.
Is it ever okay? I mean, how would you advise somebody if they're like, well, you know, I'm friends with these eight people and we had this other friend who I don't care that much for, but now they friended me and now I feel like a jerk if I say no.
I have just told people to say a basic line like, I only friend people that I speak to personally on, you know, at least once a week or something. So if I speak to you, then we are friends, you know, in person or up.
Well, that's really pompous, isn't it? Oh, I'm sorry. I don't speak to you once a week. So now I'm not good enough to be your friend. That's what's going to happen.
It's a comfort level, right? And so it's, you know, we don't have to do anything.
Why not
we
just accept
to.
The friend and then just block their.
We can do that too.
Because you can accept friends and then
but
not
have you
ever have to deal
tried
with them,
that,
right?
Though it's like, okay, to try to categorize, okay, these certain groups of people can see these photographs and these or whatever. It's a it's a nightmare. And then Facebook will change their privacy settings again and again. And next thing you know, your cell phone number's out there or whatever. It's like it's an uncontrollable force. Privacy is an illusion on Facebook.
You really think so? You think it's
absolutely.
Too hard to keep up with their privacy settings? You think something's going to...
Absolutely. I mean, you know, one thing that teens do a lot is they love screenshots, right? So I've discovered this with you know, the groups of teens I discovered. So like there's accountability for everything, right? So if you post something, someone will tag it, someone will copy and paste it, and so you will get busted doing something. You can't control. You know, if you're putting it out there, especially on the internet, we all know this, right? It's never really gone.
That is true.
Right.
It never is really gone. Okay, we have lots to talk about because you mentioned teens.
Right.
I have a 13-year-old son who is not on Facebook that I know of.
Good.
As of right now.
I'm glad you said that.
That
because,
I know of because,
we'll
because I remember
that.
What I was, and I don't think he's as conniving as I was. Let's hope.
And many of them are using it as a decoy. You know, my parents are on it, so, you know, I'm on these six other sites, right? But, you know, I'll just share a post so my parent thinks
absolutely.
That they're monitoring
absolutely.
Me.
Very smart.
Right.
Very smart. And also the reconnecting with old flames. I think that has mm-hmm. got to be an insane danger. And how much do you creep your old girlfriends or boyfriends to see what they're up to these days?
70% of us do that.
Have you done that before?
Have I creeped an ex?
Well, just somebody who you used to date 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah,
you don't
curiosity.
Talk to anymore.
Curiosity.
You're not friends with them, and you'd feel weird friending them because you don't talk to them, and then what does that mean?
Yeah,
so
I
you
think,
just type in their
yeah,
name.
Yeah, absolutely. Like curiosity. Curiosity. But in terms of like pure stalking, 70% of people stalk their exes on Facebook. 70.
And what does pure stalking mean?
Well, that's a good question. It means that you have like FBI level status of professional stalking ability, right? You are going through everything.
But you have to friend them to do that, right? I mean,
not necessarily. If your profile is open to friends of friends, you know, and if you've been blocked, some people have created fake profiles and you would ask someone, friend me so that I could continue to follow this person. People do it all the time.
Oh boy.
A little scary.
All right. So we've got lots to get into. Dr. Susanna Flores is here. The book is called Face Hooked. It's available. The ebook is available on Amazon.com right now.
Right.
You can probably pre-order the hard copy on Amazon.com right now.
Right.
And will it be in bookstores in the Chicago area?
Hopefully, yes.
And you have an appearance coming up somewhere? Right?
Yes, I have a book signing at Open Books on October 18th at 7 o'clock.
Open Books. Where's that at?
On Institute Street. Don't have the address right offhand.
We'll get that one.
I
threw you on the spot there, didn't I?
That up.
Open Books on October 18th. It's very interesting. 312. Well, where's it at?
213 West Institute Place.
213 West Institute Place is Open Books. That's on October 18th. Lots more to do with Dr. Susanna Flores after the news. 312-981-7200. Send us your calls and texts like 773 did. I refuse to do Facebook, much to my children's dismay. There's nothing like the human voice. At 63 years of age, a phone call does it for me. Well, it's interesting. She says, much to my children's dismay, because the kids are pointing, just put
it.
Us on Facebook, Mom. Now, it's funny because my mom, who I love dearly, but we all know that our mothers can get on the phone with us and never let us go sometimes, right?
Very true.
So I try we'll be like, well, let's just text Mom and see. And Mom has gotten decently good at texting, but should we feel guilty that we're replacing the human voice with texting or with Facebook in some instances?
I feel guilty about it. You know, I think that we need to come back to the voice a little bit.
Do you think we will reach a certain point and then we'll come back?
I would like to say yes. I don't think so. I think we're getting too used to it.
Interesting.
You know, it's like letter writing. Do we still write letters?
Pretty rarely.
Not so much, right?
I have a friend on Facebook who actually said that she wrote a letter to her senator today. And I don't know if that was a pen and paper letter or just an email, but that's another
instance
altogether. 312-981-7200. We'll take your calls on Facebook right after the news. Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio in the Tribune Tower in the Magnificent Mile, it's Matt Bubala here with you on Radio 720 WGN. Very excited for this morning to welcome back our old friend Mike Stephen. I want to say Stephen every time I see his name. Caitlin, don't give me that look. Mike Stephen is in with Outside the Loop Radio at 6 a.m. this Saturday morning. Frank Fontana is moving to Sunday afternoons, and Mike and Outside the Loop Radio, we just had Mike on the show a couple of months ago to talk about his Mike Loves Tacos web series, and now he's got his show on at 6 a.m. this coming Saturday morning, this morning in a couple of hours. Right now we're in studio with Dr. Susanna Flores. The book is called Face Hooked. It's available right now on Amazon.com and in bookstores this weekend. She's doing an appearance at Open Books on Institute Street on October 18th. That's coming up in a couple of weeks. So you have time to get the book and read it and then ask you all sorts of questions. Right.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You can get some free advice because normally she would cost you like thousands of dollars an hour.
Thousands.
I'm quite sure. Thousands. Thousands.
Five at least. My services are
good
cheap.
For you. Keep it up. All right. So we started to get into teens just a little bit. So let's get into that right now. So my 13-year-old son, Jack, has a phone. But he is not on Facebook that I know of. And I have to say that because I am not the dumbest parent in the world.
Okay. Good,
I remember being a teenager and the god-awful things I did all the time that my parents had no idea about.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my rules with Jack on his phone are that I have the passcode to his phone and he is not allowed to delete texts. Now, once in a while, he does delete texts and I catch him. But he has also confessed to things when he's deleted them. I mean, it's tough to judge. He's a good kid and I know that. I'm sure there's some things but my rule with him is whatever you text, I'm allowed to see.
Makes sense.
And
that's what you're supposed to do.
And I tell him to tell all of his friends that.
Right.
Tell them.
Right.
I will look at this.
Mm-hmm.
Don't send me something stupid because my dad will see it.
Right.
And so he's pretty good about that. And
hide the evidence.
And it's funny, there have been times where I've texted back people. Like one time it was quite innocent. I got yelled at about this. So tell me what I probably did this wrong, but my son and his friend were out at the park. He didn't have his phone with him. another friend texted and said, hey, what are you guys doing? And I saw, you know, the phone lit up and I saw it and I thought, all right, well, he's out of the park. What do I do? So I just wrote back, we're at the park.
Okay.
And then she started texting other stuff that was inappropriate.
So, okay, so you're acting as him.
So I saw, well, I didn't mean to start that, but I did for that one, just we're at the park. And then so she started writing stuff. And so I wrote back, real nice, Sophia. And then, so I showed Jack when he got home. I said, well, this happened. And just so you know, Sophia wrote these things. He's like, oh, God. So he writes back to her, if there's punctuation, it's my dad.
That's great. That's a good story.
So I don't try to totally, you know, be him, but I did that one time. And then I felt bad afterwards. And my wife was yelling at me like, you can't pretend to be him on the phone. I'm like, I'm just letting them know he's at the park. It was innocent, I swear. So, maybe not completely, but it kind of was.
It's okay. He's 13. He's 13. I would just say the only thing probably just saying this is his dad. And we are.
I should have done that. I should have done that. This is his dad, and he's at the park. You're right. I should have. So, lesson learned. I have not pretended to be Jack since then on the phone, but I do check his phone all the time.
As you should.
You do think so?
Absolutely.
You know, some people question that because when you and I were teenagers running around the Museum of Science and Industry,
right,
our parents did not know a lot of what we were doing.
Well, yeah.
We didn't have cell phones. They trusted us to be wherever we were, and thank God we came home alive at the end of the night every night.
Exactly.
But with our kids these days, I generally know where he is at all times. He's good about checking in as of right now. He's only 13, but, you know, when I was his age and I left the house, I had to be home when the streetlights came on. Now it's not the same way with our kids. Do you think that we are overwatching our kids a little bit too much, whether it be on Facebook or just in everyday life? Or do you think, no, the way times have changed, that's appropriate?
I think it depends on your neighborhood, where you live, the school. Psychologists call them like helicopter parents. They're hovering,
yeah,
right? You know, they're hovering. Kids have to learn to make mistakes and work things out on their own. In that case, you know, I think that parents need to take a step back and let them problem solve for themselves and give them an opportunity to do that. When it comes to anything that's mobile device, I think you're doing the appropriate thing. You should be very vigilant. Because you also want to sit down with your teen. This is what I discuss in the teen chapter. It's like, you know, so I get a lot of parents say, well, how do I get my kid off of social media? And I said, you don't.
Yeah.
It's their world. You know, that's like rave, you know, parties in the 90s or, you know, like whatever, malls in the 80s, like with us. So this is their world. This is where they communicate. It's just more about like sit down and understand it. Ask them which platforms they're on and what they do. Just have a curiosity about it. So I would say it is a parent's responsibility. I also think it's a school administrator's responsibility. There's a story, you know, on there where someone went to her principal and asking for help because she was being bullied, and the principal just said, well, get off of it. Get off of Twitter. Get off of Facebook. And she's like, you don't understand my world. How
yeah.
can you possibly help me? It's not that easy. Like, all my friends are on there. And she's like, if you are responsible, you would get off social media. And she's like, we're on different planets.
Yeah.
And she's like, you know, she's like, it's your responsibility. And I agreed with her completely. So I'd say it is your responsibility to sit down with your kids and ask them, you know, what is it that you like about Facebook? What is it that, you know, what is Vibe? What is, you know, this? What is that? What's Vine? And just understand it and teach them about appropriate posting, you know, teach them about privacy. I think that our generation, X, in case anyone's wondering, is probably the last to know what true privacy meant and to value it and to respect it. And that would be the lesson taught to teens nowadays.
Interesting. And so while I monitor my son's phone and monitor these things, it's not enough to do that. You need to really, I would imagine you would say, talk to them about these things,
right,
about what they're seeing, what they're doing. So,
and warn them about predators and, you know,
yeah,
there's a lot of crazy people out there.
So as far as I know, my son doesn't have any social media right now. He has asked for Facebook in the past. We've kept him off it so far, and Instagram and all these things the kids are on these days.
Mm-hmm.
At what age do you think it's appropriate to let them on, and how, you know, like you said, it's their world, so
right,
holding them back from it, while that makes us feel better, maybe isn't going to be the best thing for their social growth.
If it were my world, and it's certainly not, at least in my own mind it is, if it were up to me, I honestly would say 17, 18. I know that's a
bit unrealistic,
far, right?
Though, isn't
it? It's so unrealistic. And the reason is that teens are, you know, developing their identity. You know, that's their developmental stage. It's like, you know, who am I? And it's unavoidable to be influenced by the multiple messages from multiple people all the time. And imagine if it's like, you know, negative, 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 and you're getting all of this. I mean, it has led to teen suicide, and I know those are extremes, right? But it also has led to increased cases of low self-esteem, eating disorders, even just magnified it further. Again, it's a platform for people to discuss different things. And so, you know, on the one hand, teens have a voice like never before. You know, YouTube has certainly tapped into that. Corporations and love teens, now hiring them to advertise for them, Coca-Cola, et cetera, right? Teens have the voice. And so there's power there, right? But with power comes responsibility. And so more than ever, just like adults, teens want to be heard. So our friends are no longer our friends. Our friends are our audience. We're performing, right? That's how we're changing. That's one of the ways.
And let me ask you about the teens and the use of the social media, because we bullied kids when we were young, and that happened all the time. There were always kids getting picked on, or we got picked on from time to time. I think we all went through both ends of it in some way. But now it's so easy for kids to gang up on kids on social media and stuff like that, and there's a bit of a herd mentality, I think, when it comes to that.
Absolutely.
So how has that battle become different, and how do we help our kids through that? I mean, we're not going to be able to keep them off social media, but they might end up getting picked on or want to take part in that in some way. So,
right. This is where the parent becomes very hypervigilant of, like, you know, if you are being picked on, if you are, you know, feeling badly, you need to tell me immediately and we're going to work it out together. Cyberbullying is an entirely different beast. If you were bullied, now magnify it times 1,000 or more, because it's, as you said, it encourages negativity from other teens. And, you know, there's burn pages, even for the deceased teens, like Amanda Todd is the story that I shared in my book. It's like she's deceased because of cyberbullying. She committed suicide, and there's still burn pages. You know, there's still these comments that are coming out, you know, attacking her, and she's deceased. You know, it's really horrible, you know, what can happen. And I've heard story after story where teens just, you know, they said that they just had many thoughts of suicide. They just couldn't escape it, you know, so it was coming from all different angles, and it just creates momentum.
And what is it about this? I mean, think about this. So this poor girl ended up taking her life, right, because of cyberbullying.
Right.
And there are still people out there making negative comments towards her,
right,
you said.
Right.
So, and that's because I imagine they're all...
It apparently was cool to do. You know, people want to be on the in thing. So if there's a burn page, you don't want to be on the receiving end of the burn page. So you want to be...
You're on the attack.
There you go.
And is it anonymous? Are people anonymously doing that?
Not necessarily, no.
Because I always think, well, there's this safety and I can just be mean. I can get this out of my system. I can take this out on somebody and there's no repercussions.
Well, there's certainly repercussions, and that's what teens don't understand, is that, you know, you keep this up, you know, you can have police knocking on your door. And this is the conversation to have with your teens as well, you know, is that, you know, if you pick on people, and especially there's evidence, right? And for the victims, we say save everything. Do not delete comments. Do not whatever. You want to take the screen, speaking of screenshots, you do want to take this. You want to speak to authorities. And if it gets, you know, very serious, you want to talk to the police and make it stop immediately.
All right. So just another moment on our kids. When we let our kids on Facebook, Instagram, whatever they're on, is it, okay, you can be on this, I have to be your friend, I have to have access to all these things. How do you, as a parent, what's the best way to monitor that?
You just do your best and assume that they are on many more sites that you don't understand, right? And it's more about just speaking to them about what is appropriate and what is not, and to, you know, don't share things that you would not want shared about you. And learn about the privacy thing and respect each other. I know that it sounds very glorified and a lot easier said than done, but the conversation has to happen, because if you're not speaking to your kids, someone else is.
Well, and that's the tough part is that, you know, the technology keeps going so much faster and faster that for a parent who's got a job and other kids and all this stuff, it's hard to keep up with. You know, I'm on Facebook and I'm on Twitter, but, you know, there's new things coming out all the time, and I don't do Instagram, and I don't want to learn about it. I don't want to, you know, I don't have time for this.
Right.
But it's important.
You have to. I'm sorry, Matt.
It sucks.
I'm so sorry, but yeah, you have to. It goes with the goes with the job, you know, so just take time. You know, and also, I do advocate for this too. Learn privacy settings and sit with your teen and do it with them. You know, and so, like, if you don't know it, have them, they may know it better than you. I mean,
probably.
They are, like, so tech savvy more than any time, you know, in history. So they can probably, you know, talk you through it, but you want to be Googling the stuff or talking to IT people and just try to protect their privacy settings as much as possible and just tell them to be careful. Teens are going to be teens, right? I mean, they're going to do, you know, and we don't want to know. You think you want to know. There's certain things you don't want to know, right? But just tell them to be careful and that you understand we speak to them about the power of social media, both for positive and negative.
Well, you know what the thing is? I know we're helicopter parents these days and things like that, but it's just, I want my kids to be okay. I want them to fall down. I want them to suffer. I want them to have great highs and lows, but I want them to go through all this prepared for the future. And, mm-hmm. and you hear stories about the children who commit suicide or things like that. And then you get, oh my God, now I've got to keep an eye on all this. And so we go so far to the other side. So it's just really hard these days to balance how much do I get involved and how much do I let them be out on their own?
Well, you know, one thing that, I mean, it doesn't even have to be that extreme. If I ever wanted to scare some seniors, I would just, you know, remind them that colleges look at sure. Facebook pages, and you know, then I get the deer in the headlights look, like, oh my God, you know. So the drunk pictures, the half naked pictures, the pictures of you know, throwing up on someone's lawn or something, you right. may want to delete those. And you know, the rule of thumb is, people say, well, what's appropriate to share, what's not? And I said, well, this is my comparison. If you would go in the middle of, let's say, a grocery store where you know most people, right, and you can announce something over a bullhorn, right, and you're comfortable with that, post it. Okay, if there's any apprehension at all, like you're concerned that you might hurt someone's feelings, then you might want to think twice. Same thing goes for teens.
I think I've told Jack or friends to tell their kids, if you don't want your parents or your principal or your priest to see it,
right.
it shouldn't be out there.
Right.
There's your safety net.
Right.
Either of those three are going to embarrass you.
Absolutely.
Probably stay away
Absolutely.
From it.
Absolutely.
All right, coming up next, we're going to take some calls, 312-981-7200, and I'll read some texts. And let's get into creeping your exes on Facebook and where that leads. Matt Bubala with Dr. Susanna Flores in studio on Radio 720 WGN. The Matt Bubala Show on Radio 720 WGN. A few more minutes with Dr. Susanna Flores. The book is called Face Hooked. If you are face hooked, you can give us a call at 312-981-7200. We used to work together at the Museum of Science and Industry, so I need to ask a favorite memory from the Museum of Science and Industry.
I loved the Omnimax Theater. Mm. That was my favorite tour to do, and the little space suits that we would wear,
yes.
right?
The jumpsuits.
Right, and we would mess with the volume with people, you know, so like we would magnify the earthquakes or something just to freak people out. That was my favorite.
I remember that on that projector, there would, like, you know, the tiniest piece of lint would get on there and be magnified. So you had this button you would sit and you would hit, and it was almost like a windshield wiper went across
like,
it and
like
cleaned it.
Air or something.
Yeah.
That was right. I forgot about that.
God,
and you sneak your friends in, remember?
I did not do that.
I did that all the time.
You used to sneak your friends in?
Yeah, absolutely. Oh. You know, so I'd be like, these are the good seats. So this is where you want to sit. Right.
Oh, too funny. I used to love the submarine. Was my
right,
favorite thing.
Right.
I never worked the coal mine.
I did once. It was really depressing. It was like very dark all day.
And a diesel-y smell too, right?
Right. Right.
That was
and
tough
I'm like,
to be
I,
in.
And I didn't like it at all. And I heard it change. I haven't been there in years, and it has changed dramatically. Apparently,
we've gone with the kids.
Dramatic.
And the museum is better than ever. I think it's
Fantastic.
Awesome. And the submarine is underground now.
How appropriate.
They built this huge. It's awesome.
Okay.
But you have to pay to get onto the submarine. You can't just walk through it anymore, even without the tours. That is
right.
too bad.
It was actually free in our day, remember?
Yeah.
It was by donation only.
Yes, it was free. Caitlin's like, how old are you? That it was free. Yeah, it was free to get into the museum back in the
Most
day.
Most of them.
And so school groups would come through like crazy.
Right.
I mean, it was the most visited museum.
Right. We were always
because of that. Because
busy.
The other ones all were charging at the time. We were the only one that was still free.
Right.
But yeah, now the submarine's underground. It's awesome. The railroad has been changed. The model railroad
really?
Is now, it's like from Seattle to Chicago, the way they have it set up. And it's more, it's not just a big rectangle. Now it like goes in and out and you can walk through it a little better. And there's a old United Airlines plane cut in half and hanging from a balcony that you can walk through.
Oh, very cool.
There's a lot of cool stuff. You should get back over there.
Okay.
It's really neat.
I think I will.
It's still a cool museum. All right. Pappy is on hold, so we got to take Pappy's call. Of course, it wouldn't be a Saturday morning without Pappy. Pappy, you're on 720 WGN. How are you?
How are you doing, man?
I'm good. And what do you want to say to Dr. Susanna Flores?
I would never touch Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. And I taught my son to do the same.
How old is your son?
He's 26 now.
Oh, he's 26. Okay.
But I taught him 10 years ago. You know, it's just an NSA front group. And what do you need it for? A bunch of anonymous people, you know, bullying you. What the hell is that for?
You think it's
you don't know them.
You think it's a government conspiracy, Pappy?
Well, Google is. We all know that. And so is the other things.
So you say just stay away from it. You don't need it.
Absolutely. You want to be tracked? You want your profile everywhere? Go ahead, do it.
No, that's a good point. All right, Pappy, thank you so much. I think Pappy's a little off the rails, of course, but you are giving out information like crazy.
And you are.
There was just a story in the news this week that there is an ad service that relaunched this week, and instead of using Google Analytics and what pages you're researching, things like that, they're going to use all your Facebook information, your gender profile, your age, your different likes, dislikes from that. So we are giving away an insane amount of information these days, aren't we?
We are. He's not alone, actually, in his view. It's like the ultimate spying machine. And not too long ago, actually, it was a big controversy that Facebook did this social experiment on its users, about 700 or so. So it was like an emotion experiment. So if they were posting negative content, people would tend to post negative posts, right? So we were being affected by what we were seeing. It would make sense. The problem is that it wasn't really – there's some debate as to whether that was legal. And certainly I don't think it was ethical because, you do usually need consent. So Facebook is arguing that by signing up for it, you know, there's probably like this long list of terms and conditions
sure
or whatever.
Yeah.
It's probably this little line. And I think there is this little itty bitty line that they own whatever you put on, even the deleted stuff, you know.
Well, there was a big thing about photos a few years ago that they can use any photo they want that you put out
there. In any way that they want. And so if you are prepared for that, I guess that's why I said, Pappy, you know, you may not be that off, right? You know, and when it comes to this stuff, it's like it can be used, you know, against your will.
It's interesting when you say that they were manipulating or figuring out how you can manipulate moods by, if you're writing something negative, let's put negative posts around it and see how that affects you.
Right.
That seems ripe for a lawsuit. If somebody committed suicide.
Right.
And you could say, well, look at what they were part of this Facebook experiment.
I think they would probably set themselves up for a lawsuit. Right. I think it would be kind of hard to prove, you know, like there would be other factors in a person's life, perhaps, of course.
Sure.
But it could potentially open them up for a lawsuit.
847 text. I call Facebook bad Christmas newsletter 24/7, 365. No, thanks.
Okay.
Well, there are people that use it that way, aren't there? That post like, all right, but we only have a few minutes left. And I do want to ask about this. Creeping your exes on Facebook, looking back. Mm-hmm. You said that 20% of divorces these days are being attributed to Facebook.
Directly attributed to Facebook.
Because people are seeking. I mean, it's interesting because are people getting divorced because of Facebook or are people using Facebook as a way to end up getting divorced?
Probably the latter. Right. So people are finding their exes. People are being manipulated by people. Again, people only post or not only, but they tend to post only positive content. So like I do charity work. I'm at the gym again. Charity work again. So we are being driven by this illusion. Right. And so, of course, someone looks phenomenal on their profile. And so we think, well, this person's better than my spouse. Right. And so we get drawn into that illusion. And also there's an addiction quality. You know, people have broken up with people because their spouse won't get off of Twitter. Their spouse won't get off I've heard these stories, you know, breakups that happen because they prefer the Twitter to the girlfriend.
Well, you and I were talking earlier about, later in the show, I'm speaking with a gentleman about the idea of gambling being legalized as sports betting.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, I think one of the dangers is making it easier for people to feed their addictions.
Right.
And you said, well, if they're going to addicted, they're going to find a way to do it or not. But now with Facebook, so these divorces or if you're leading your relationships, maybe you were going to go seek something anyways.
Perhaps,
but
yes.
But Facebook
makes
it all this easier that,
absolutely.
Oh, suddenly I'm seeing pictures of this person,
right,
and I'm
it's
connecting
in your
with
face,
them.
Right. It's in your face, so to speak, right? It's the availability of it, right? And so you're right. I mean, it does depend on a person's character. If they're going to do it, they're going to do it, you know, but it's just too easy. The temptation is there.
And so how do you advise people on that? I mean, should you never seek out an ex because that is dangerous, or is it, oh, it's okay to be friends with them? Is the curiosity about you yourself, but how is your spouse going to react to, oh, yeah, I'm friends with so-and-so. Yeah, I dated her 20 years ago. No big deal. She reached out. Or I reached out. Why did you reach out to that person? What did you think of them all of a sudden?
Right. You need to communicate with your spouse. And I get this question a lot in therapy. Like, it's not really cheating. And I said, here's how you know you're cheating, right? If you can tell your spouse about it, right, all of it, it's not cheating. If you can't, you know, or if you're holding back any part of it, it's cheating. right? So if there's anything in question, like, okay, I friended an ex, she, you know, she's kind of flirtatious, tell your wife and have her input on it, on how she feels, and, you know, same thing with your husband. In terms of friending an ex, try to remember why you broke up with them in the first place and then make that determination, because chances are they're, you know, they may pretend to be different, but you're like, oh, that's why I broke up with you.
I just want to warn you, when you get calls next week from some wives saying, my husband came home and said he made out at the bar, but he told me about it, and so now it's not cheating. What kind of advice are you giving people?
Oh, that's hysterical, right? It's like, well, he is telling, but it's like he still needs to stop doing it.
Yeah, baby, but I love you.
Right. But Facebook flirting is still flirting.
It's still flirting, absolutely. Which you might do anyways, but it's making it so much easier.
Right, and it is, well, it's also it's easier to get caught.
Well, and it's also easier to do it. See that, you know, there's a difference between I was out at the bar having drinks with some guys, and then there was this girl I was flirting with.
Right.
Because that might happen, but my ex-girlfriend is on Facebook, and now I'm flirting with her. That's different, because we had this entire relationship.
Right, you know, and then you start IMing, you know, instant messaging each other or something, and it can get a little dangerous. That's when you're playing with fire a little bit.
If you can tell your wife or your husband about it, in general, you're okay, but still no touchy-feely, right?
No touchy-feely.
Okay. Dr. Susanna Flores.
Not even the screen.
Don't want to get into that. That's your next book.
Right.
The book is called Face Hooked. It's available on Amazon.com. It'll be in bookstores soon. She will be at Open Books on October 18th. Is there, what do you want to give out? Do you want to give out any social media or a website or anything like that?
It's drsusannaflores.com. And if you just Google Face Hooked, you will find me.
Dr. Susanna Flores, Flores.
Yes.
.com. Thank you so much for coming
Thank you for having me here.
All right, we got to take a quick break, and then Rob Martier with the news.
The girlfriends.
Coming up on the Kathy and Judy show.
It's Steve this week.
What?
Steve for Judy. Because. Oh.